Hello, everybody. I am Bill Buckmaster, along with producer Rosemary Brandt. Rose and I would like to welcome you. It is the Buckmaster Show. It's Thursday, June 12, 2014. We are live here, 12:04 to 1 each weekday on AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice. But you don't need to be in front of a radio to hear the show. You can be live streaming it anywhere in the world, which people do, at buckmastershow.com. That's also the address that you can find us for our podcasts, and all of our show archives are there for you. So the record is there. Every show we have done since we began this venture in January of 2011 is there for the listening. We're going to begin with the monthly showdown. This is a relatively new feature, a feature I like here on the Buckmaster Show, featuring Sean McCluskey and David Morales. Then the bottom of the hour, we completely change gears after David and Sean. I think we'll need to spend a half hour with Tucson-based writer Nancy Turner. Nancy has a huge following. Her new novel is titled My Name is Resolute. The Buckmaster live line number is 790-2040. We encourage folks to join in this conversation. We also encourage you to go to our Facebook page, Bill Buckmaster. David Morales also has a very active Facebook page, as does Sean McCluskey. And I think between the three of us, we certainly reach thousands of people. I would say that would be safe.
Absolutely.
To say,
very diverse, diverse group, too.
Very diverse group, lots of different voices, and that's what we like here on the Buckmaster Show. This is our new monthly segment, relatively new. I think it's the past 3 months. We have two gentlemen. They rarely agree on anything, but they do agree, and I'm glad they do, about wanting to come on the program. Sean McCluskey, Tea Party and Republican Party activist, seated to the right of me, and then the left of me, leftist David Morales, creator of the Three Sonorans blog site, which just celebrated, did I read on Facebook, how many posts have you had since this thing began?
2.3 million, I think.
And, wow.
Yeah, it's a fourth year already.
Fourth year.
In June, yeah.
Congratulations on that. Gentlemen, of course, we want to talk about the hot news story of the day, and that is nearly 1,000 children, some as young as three years old, are living in a Border Patrol warehouse in Nogales, Arizona. The violence and pressure from gangs in Central America prompting families to send the kids north to try to cross illegally into the United States. Sean and David, the photo that I think everybody has seen, probably around the world, the photo of the children packed into an old warehouse in Nogales is emblematic, or is at least becoming emblematic, of our country's confusing and broken immigration system.
Well, first of all, I'd like to state out that you said it's because of the violence in Honduras. If that's the case, why is there not an influx of this same refugee in, or illegal, whichever term you want to use, in Mexico City, which is much closer than Texas? I mean, they have to travel several hundred miles. They can go south to Nicaragua, mm-hmm. but yet they're choosing to go all the way to Texas. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with Obama in 2012 stating, let's open the borders, and now we're creating amnesty, and we're creating an immigration reform dialogue amongst everyone.
Does the blame rest, in your opinion, Sean McCluskey, with the White House?
It's child abuse, and there should be charges filed, absolutely. Because how does a child, 3 years old to 7 years old, there's one fully disabled, wheelchair-bound, how did that person get from Honduras to Texas? There had to be somebody who helped him, A. There had to be somebody who got paid, B. So there's a money trail. Why is there not a Senate investigation? Why are there not congressional hearings on this? This is child abuse. It's blatant child abuse. You look at that picture, it's absolutely disgusting. We treat the prisoners in Gitmo better than we treat these kids.
So you say a warrant ought to be delivered to the White House.
Top down. Everybody involved.
David Morales.
Well, let me be clear here. You're asking for a Senate investigation on the children's journey through Mexico?
Absolutely. I'd like to know the people that are involved, because those people need to be prosecuted.
Okay, so now
somebody's delivering these kids to the American border. We should be collecting the people that are delivering the kids and charging them. If we can't charge them, Mexico should charge them. But somebody should hold them accountable, because David, taking a child through the desert is absolute child abuse. If you've, and I know you have, if you've talked to somebody who've made that journey, and sorry, I'm getting excited.
Go ahead.
You've heard the history of the rape trees. You've heard how they get treated, how they get starved of water, left underneath a tree. Somebody's going to come find you. You do this with 30 kids at a time, you're a despicable human being, and you deserve to be buried under some rock somewhere.
Now, why are they coming for?
Because Obama opened up the floodgates and said, please come to our country.
Wait a second. So Obama is deporting more Mexicans than ever before, and now he's open borders, open floodgate Obama.
There is. Let's look at the numbers. In 2006, they were at 6,500. Wall Street Journal just published this 2 days ago, by the way. In 2013, that number jumped up to 13,000. Right now, currently, we're on pace to hit 80,000 illegal entrants into this community, into this country, that are all under the age of 18. Thank you, Mr. Obama. There is no other reason for this. Now, the despicable part of it is that we're housing them in cages in the Border Patrol warehouse stations with no food, no toilets, no water. I mean, the conditions are despicable. They're inhumane. We treat prisoners better than this.
So what do you suggest we do with them?
Send them back.
Send them back.
Where? Send them back. Why are they coming? Stop the flood.
But what do
stop
you mean?
The propaganda what do you mean from when the you top say send down. Them back, Our though? President said... Let's please come to our country. So you can't tell me that a coyote, somebody who is playing on somebody's emotions to get to a freedom country, they're making money on this.
I'm gonna challenge your truth, this truth of your statement. You said Obama said please just come to our
December
country.
December 2012. Yes.
And he said that to Guatemalans.
No, he said it in general in an open blank statement. And if you read between the lines, what do you
he
think
says?
The
you know, please,
did?
Kids under 18 years old, please come here.
What do you think
here?
The coyotes did? The I'm coyotes are honorable people. They're certainly not. The coyotes are taking advantage of the poor, of the desolate, and the ones that have hope. And the dreamers. They're looking for a dream.
That's right. Now, see, what I want to go into is why are the people coming here? And the problem is, it is the United States that's destroying the economies of the country south of us. That leaves no other option but for them to come here. Now, some of these kids were unaccompanied, right? Their parents are over
There's
here.
There's no way a child went 400 miles through the barren desert and found Texas. There's no possible way. You've got children, David. Tell me your youngest son could make it from Marana to this station.
Like I said, their parents...
Can he do it?
Their parents came across the border and they stayed, and then they came across the border looking for them.
Really? Yep. You're saying the lost dog, the puppy, found his way home.
So
There's
it,
no
so
way possible.
You're saying a bunch of people went over to Guatemala and just picked up a bunch of kids and just... brought them across the border.
No, what they did is they went to their mom and dad and said, pay me, sucker. I'm going to take your kid and I'm going to go rape him through the desert and I'm going to drag him. I'm going to starve him. They're showing up malnutritious.
How are
they showing up with no water. They're showing up almost completely dehydrated. And this is humane.
Do you know where the children were captured at?
Along the San Antonio border or in the Texas border, which now supposedly is closed. So now where are they going?
Well, from what I understand, these kids came across the border and asked for refugee status, or just said, we're going to stay here.
How does a 7-year-old know that? Tell me that there's no direction, please.
Or
a 3-year-old. You can't sit there. How? The kid in the wheelchair, how did he get 300 miles through the desert? Please explain this to me.
All right. Stand by. Jim has been waiting on the line, has a question for us. Jim Kelly is with us. Go ahead, Jim.
Hi. Interesting conversation.
Thank you.
My question to both panelists is this. Isn't about time that we build an Ellis Island-like facility in Nogales and start processing these people humanely and correctly?
All right. David Morales.
Well, I mean, that brings up an interesting point about the racism of immigration policies over the years because, you know, everyone in this country, you know, unless you're Native American, is an immigrant. And your definition of illegal immigration depends upon your status because, you know, you could say that the European invasion of the Americas was an illegal invasion. Certainly the illegal invasion into Texas was illegal and so on. So it's all a matter of perspective. So when we look at these children, you know, I just wonder what would it look like if these children were blonde-haired and blue-eyed?
It wouldn't make a damn bit of difference to me if they're stuck in a cage like they are right now. And there is no way that you would take a 7-year-old, regardless if he's blonde-haired and blue-eyed, or if he was brown-skinned, or if he's black-skinned, or purple, or yellow, and polka-dotted, it doesn't make a damn bit of difference.
Okay, but earlier on your Facebook page, when you posted this picture, you said, I'm going to talk about the invasion of illegals.
Yes, it's an illegal entrance into this community.
When you look
is it
at,
not?
When you look
How
at
do
these
they
children,
enter illegally? When that you look is at the
these,
statement.
When you look at these children, first of all, illegals...
Irrelevant of color of skin, by the way.
Okay, I know you guys love the English language, but let me show you. Illegals is not a noun, okay? So you cannot refer to people as illegals, just to correct your grammar there. So these are not illegals. So what you're saying is maybe, because here's the thing.
The illegal entrant, is that preferred?
It makes a big difference because you have friends, you've broken the law at one point. You've sped.
Absolutely, every day.
Do you refer to yourself as illegals from now on?
No, but do I do something that's illegal? Absolutely.
Okay, so you're going to continue.
Everybody does.
You're gonna continue,
I'm honest. I'm going to tell you that I do.
You're going to continue breaking the law.
So do you every day. Everyone does.
Okay.
So are you going to refer to yourself, Sean, I think, as
there is something that I do that it's illegal? Yeah. Absolutely.
Should we,
should we
detain
yes.
you?
Would I be
should we detain you because we know you're going
if
to...
If I get caught, yes. If I don't get caught, continue doing what you're doing.
But why don't you refer to yourself... Why don't we dehumanize you and refer to you from now on as an illegal person?
Irrelevant of what you call it.
It makes a big difference
because...
It is
the fact that you have... 3,000 children in three different states stuffed in a cage like I don't even know what to compare it to because it's that inhumane.
Sean, you did not answer Jim's question about Ellis Island.
That's immigration reform, and that's a bigger issue. Now, do we take these children in, and do we put them into the United States military? Do we do something with them? How do you afford it? How do you feed them? How do you clothe them? How do you take care of them? How do you find out if they're diseased? What if they're sick? How do you find all that out? At what cost?
Now,
who foots the bill?
Now, see, I think Jim's question is interesting because the thing is that the problem with our immigration policy, it is very racist because, first of all, we have a huge Canadian border that no one cares about.
Nobody comes through it.
You're lying. That's not true.
Well, actually, OTMs come through it.
You got to get your
other
facts
than Mexicans.
Straight.
Oh, okay.
Now, besides ignorant facts like statements like that,
It's a Department of Homeland Security statement. It's how they track them coming across.
The problem,
it's the Chinese that come across. It's the Muslims that come across.
You're saying that they actually
there
list
are other that there are other ethnicities that come through Mexico that come through Canada that
other
penetrate
than,
our
but
border
notice,
and
why,
they are
why
illegal.
Why the special designation of other than Mexicans? Why is it about Mexicans?
Because
why
we
don't we have
border
OTCs?
Mexico. And
we have,
a majority
we
of the
OTCs?
Immigrants that come through and that go through Sheriff Paul Babu's district are Hispanic,
why wouldn't
are
why
Mexican.
Wouldn't you call immigrants crossing the Canadian border OTCs?
Other than
Canadians, absolutely, you would.
But the Canadians
aren't invading our borders.
The invasions. You see these words that you use. I mean, they're all heavily loaded terms. Now, here's the thing: if you believe in capitalism. There should be no borders because if there's a demand for labor and there's a supply of labor under NAFTA and under capitalism, shouldn't the demand and the supply be
is there a proper way to obtain that, yes or no? And yes, there is. There are a set of rules that are being in place.
The
that,
problem
that
is
the indophobia. That the speeder or the illegal entrant is breaking.
All right, guys, we have to take a break right here. We will continue with this discussion on the showdown, the monthly showdown, David Morales and Sean McCluskey. Very passionate, both of these gentlemen, about what we have been talking about. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Al Zaragoza, the voice of Culligan Water in Southern Arizona. From cooking, cleaning, bathing, and drinking, the benefits of a Culligan system are obvious. You'll use less soap, shampoo, and detergent. Your appliances will last longer, your clothes will last longer, and stay brighter, too. All of this saves you money and adds to the quality of life. Not to mention softer skin and softer hair the whole family will enjoy. Culligan has been in Tucson since 1946, and we have seen about every water concern imaginable. We continue to stay on top of the newest state-of-the-art technology to deliver the refreshing, clean, and high-quality water that's become the Culligan hallmark of excellence. Try a Culligan water treatment system for $9.95 per month for the first 3 months' rental on an annual rental agreement. Schedule your free water test, and don't forget to ask about the Culligan high-efficiency water softener. Call 792-9700 or visit us at arizonaculligan.com. Culligan, better water, pure and simple.
Today's rapidly changing world brings challenges and opportunities. At Pima Community College, we are working with business and community leaders to develop programs that provide the right training for today's high-demand jobs. Whether the goal is a new career, transferring to a four-year college, or lifelong learning, Pima Community College can help you open the door to new opportunities.
For more information, call 206-4500 or visit pima.edu.
Widened and improved roads, new bike lanes, sidewalks, pedestrian crossings, and bus pullouts. Many of these safety improvements are funded by the Regional Transportation Authority through its 20-year plan, which is making a difference in our lives.
Hi, I'm Lori. I live near the Twin Peaks Interchange. Since that new interchange and road opened, life has become a whole lot simpler. The new road saves me time, and it's a beautiful drive. I love it.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you since 2006. Visit rtamobility.com or Facebook.
Want the best care for your companion animal? Then Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson is the place for specialty vets for your special pet. With a state-of-the-art, award-winning facility, only the Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson delivers compassionate, comprehensive veterinary emergency and specialty care 24/7 in a wide range of fields. Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson at North La Cunada Drive at West River or online at vscott.com. That's VSCOT.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Jerry!
What's wrong?
The client conference call is right now.
I thought it was next week.
I don't have the presentation ready.
Okay. Blame the internet. Say it went out.
They'll never believe that. They know we have Cox Business. Our internet is too reliable and is 100 times faster than basic DSL.
Say customer service is closed.
Cox Business has 24/7 support.
Well, say it would take too long to get a technician here.
No, they know the award-winning customer service is local. They told us to get Cox Business.
The call has started.
Good morning.
I forgot about this meeting. We have terrific internet.
Switch to Cox Business Internet and Voice for only $99 a month. Speed options up to 100 times faster than basic DSL. Plus, get a 30-day money-back guarantee and free professional installation with a 3-year agreement. Visit coxbusiness.com and switch today. Ends 8/31/14. Price excludes taxes, fees, and may be subject to minimum service requirements. Visit coxbusiness.com for internet speed options and details. Actual speeds vary. Limited 30-day money-back guarantee. Exclusions and other restrictions apply.
Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico make a great getaway for a weekend or longer. It's just 3 hours or so from Tucson and 15 degrees cooler to get to an area with so much to offer, from hiking, camping, exploring downtown historic Silver City, or just relaxing in a lovely environment. Visit southwestnewmexico.org for the complete list of great places to stay and visit in Silver City, Grant County, New Mexico.
Welcome back. It's the Monthly Showdown. David Morales is seated to the right, or left of me, excuse me. How could I make such a mistake? And Sean McCluskey to the right. Bruce Ash has a comment. He's on the Buckmaster Show live line, wants to join in the fray. Go ahead, Bruce. Hey, Bruce.
Hi. I just want to make a brief comment. I'm not going to get into the politics of what you guys are talking about, but just to set the record straight, the northern border with Canada is actually a very important border. There is a series of Customs and Border Patrol, ICE, DEA facilities all along the border. I happen to know because that's part of the business that our company is engaged in. We own two Customs and Border Patrol facilities that are right on the Canadian border. The border along Maine and Montana, these are areas that we're involved in, but there are dozens of facilities that go all the way across the Canadian border. There are literally many thousands of men and women engaged in intelligence gathering as well as law enforcement activities. So the northern border is not being ignored. It is a very crucial part of our homeland security system, and I just wanted to make sure that I tried to set the record straight for the both of you.
Okay, thanks, Bruce.
Well, my point was we have a lot less intrusion through the northern border than we do through the southern border.
You're saying a lot less alleged illegal immigration coming through the north.
Entrance, which
yeah, we have a lot less detentions because there's a lot less border patrol up there. Like Bruce said, there's dozens, but we're talking about a border that's way longer than the Mexican border. Now, I wanted to finish the thought
about
the capitalism argument was, you know, you want to have free trade and you want to have, you know, some kind of, ideally, capitalism is free trade, is open border, because capital should flow back and forth and people should come over here and shop at Costco and go back and everything. We want, in fact, we need Mexicans in this country. We need immigrants in this country or our economy collapses. Here's an example that should prove this is, you know, our agricultural. If we do not have immigrant workers, we do not have food in this country. Now, you're a big opponent of raising the minimum wage.
I do not support raising the minimum wage whatsoever.
The only people that will get paid that little and work in the Yuma Desert in the July sun are Mexicans.
So you're willing for slave labor is what you're saying. I mean, because no, that's just what you stated. The only people that are willing to work for such a pathetic wage is what you stated mm-hmm. are illegal entrants into this country.
Mm-hmm.
At 12% unemployment, I find that hard to believe.
And they've done this experiment.
It's more beneficial to sit on unemployment and collect the $12 an hour that you're getting paid on unemployment than it is to work out in the hot sun. Reduce the amount of unemployment and force the people back to
they
work.
They did this experiment where they said, we're going to take only Americans in this field, and they're going to get top priority. You know how many American teenagers want to work in
the
fields?
Did you get the workforce from Tucson? Because it's one of the laziest workforces.
People are lazy everywhere. I mean, you have trouble getting your kids to take out the trash.
They're entitled.
And now, exactly, we're all entitled.
I wasn't entitled. I was whooped if I didn't take out the trash.
You would not work in these fields. Let's put it that way.
No, I'd find a bigger, better mousetrap.
I know, but if you had to, you wouldn't, because Americans don't do that kind of work. You're right. It is close to slavery. That's what the slaves used to do.
If I had to, I would.
No, you wouldn't.
David, I've been homeless. I've been out of work. I would most certainly do whatever it took. I dug my way out of that, and I worked three jobs to do so. So don't tell me that I wouldn't do it. I've done things that I know you wouldn't do.
Okay, let's do this. Would you spend a summer working in the fields?
Now? No, I don't have to. I'm personally enriched and work my tail off.
My main point here is that without these people who, you know, surely our teenagers aren't going to do it because they're lazy. They want welfare. We'll go with your argument, okay? But someone has to pick the fruit.
Get a teenager to pull his face out of his phone that
you
bought him.
Son. But what I'm saying
is, look at the people that ride the bus. Okay. They've got $300 headphones. They've got an iPhone 5. Mine's an iPhone 4, by the way.
They're horrible. Now, who's picking the lettuce? Who's picking the tomatoes? Who's picking it? Someone has to pick it. And without Mexicans, because it's mostly Mexicans.
Negative. You can do it with a prison labor workforce.
Made up of what? Mostly Mexicans that they picked up and put them in private prisons because of SB 1070.
Depends geographically where you're located. If you're in New York, your prisons aren't full of Hispanics.
There's immigrants everywhere.
They're full of Puerto Ricans.
Okay, but either way, you have Latinos that you're exploiting for your labor.
Go to Detroit. A lot of Hispanics in Detroit. Wouldn't it primarily be black folk be in the jails there?
And they have tons of lettuce fields in Detroit. So, I mean, in California, California is the main agricultural, you know.
And it's close where? It's in the Southwest. So primarily you're going to have people or enter the country illegally from Mexico.
Immigrants, you would starve.
Negative.
It's true.
No, you would not.
Who picks your food then?
You can do prison workforce. You can increase the labor.
Those are
if
the
you
prison
increase the labor,
workforce,
then it increases the price of the good.
Okay, now you're opposed to raising the minimum wage because it raises the price of the burger at McDonald's. Well, now you're saying let's go to the fields and let's pay them more.
How am I paying them more? I'm paying them less.
So you want to go to the fields and pay them less than minimum wage?
Why would you? Look at the state of Arizona when they fix the roads with the prison workers.
How would you get
Americans? They pay them what, 50 cents an hour?
Prison work is slave labor. Okay, so you're advocating.
Why are you in prison?
All right, to the Buckmaster Show live line. John is with us. John, go ahead. You're up to the plate. Quickly, please.
I'm getting so tired of hearing this argument that Mexicans are the only people that'll get out in the fields and pick fruit. I grew up on a farm in a farming community back east. We worked in the fields all summer long. That whole argument is just nonsense.
Okay, John, thank you. David, he says that's nonsense.
So you're saying my argument is invalid 40 years ago, but things have changed in the last 40 years. There's not even like even the small family farms is becoming non-existent because major corporations are taking over these farms.
But you contend, David, people would starve without the illegals here.
It's yes.
No, negative. They would not. There's a replaceable workforce.
In Alabama, when they passed SB 56, the anti-immigrant law, all the asparagus fields went unpicked because no one would pick them. And there was unemployed people there. There's all kinds of examples of this where no one will work.
Reduce the government handout and you'll put people back to work because they have two choices then.
But you're going to put who
starve
back?
Or work.
What do you mean?
The unemployed, the people that are sitting on their hands, that are collecting Section 8, that are collecting things, that are just sitting there collecting from the government, the non-taxpayer, the non-producers.
They're going to go work in the fields.
If you reduce their subsidies, yes, they will.
That's not true at all.
All right, we're going to have to end it on that point. The Monthly Showdown, David Morales, thank you very much. We'll look for you on Facebook and the Three Sonorans. Sean McCluskey will look for you also on Facebook. Both of you are accepting new friends on your Facebook.
Always
looking for new friends, and we're looking for them too on the Buckmaster Show. David and Sean, I hope you both have a great weekend.
Thanks, Bill. Do the same.
Consider the arts and recreation-oriented historic community of Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. This would be a great weekend to get away to the mile-high city of Silver City, and it's just 3 hours east of Tucson. I consider it still mild days, mild summer days and cool nights over there. So much to do. You can explore the famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. Great places to stay like Bear Paw Ranch. You can get the fine listing of places to stay and things to do at southwestnewmexico.org. We'll be back right after this.
SRN News. I'm Rich Thomason in Washington. A U.S. defense official says Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl, scheduled to arrive tomorrow at Brooke Army Medical Center in Texas, he was released from Taliban captivity on May 31st. Around the globe, leaders expressing alarm over the situation in Iraq, where terrorist fighters have captured two key cities and are vowing to take their fight to Baghdad. Officials say several plane loads of Americans have been evacuated from a major Iraqi airbase in Sunni territory north of Baghdad. Police and soldiers in Afghanistan have set up checkpoints at just about every intersection in the capital. They're searching vehicles and frisking drivers, part of a massive security operation ahead of this weekend's presidential runoff. On Wall Street, stocks are lower, the Dow, NASDAQ, and the S&P all in the red. More details at srnnews.com.
Here in Tucson, we love our beautiful mountain views.
But large windows and sliding glass doors are huge energy zappers.
At American Openings, we build our doors just like our energy-saving windows to keep the heat where it belongs, on the outside. No matter the style, American Openings will create your doors right here in Tucson at a fraction of our competitors' costs. And although the price is less, our quality is excellent. Call today and enjoy our beautiful views year-round without losing your cool.
Call 664-1202 or visit AmericanOpenings.com.
Today's rapidly changing world brings challenges and opportunities. At Pima Community College, we are working with business and community leaders to develop programs that provide the right training for today's high-demand jobs. Whether the goal is a new career, transferring to a four-year college, or lifelong learning, Pima Community College can help you open the door to new opportunities.
For more information, call 206-4500 or visit pima.edu.
Vero Mori is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. And now at Vero Amori's lovely new location within the remodeled Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, Vero Amori is proud to announce an expanded menu and bar offerings with 16 microbrews on tap and 14 keg wines, along with two separate cooler rooms to keep the beverages at just the right temperature. Vero Amori, Plaza Palomino, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amori on the web at veroamori.com.
Hello?
Hey, honey. Just packing and getting ready for my flight home.
Great! You didn't forget about Adam's soccer game, did you?
Hey, it's his last game of the season. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
But you land at 4. How can you be there by 5?
No problem. I'm flying into Tucson. I parked right by the terminal, and the soccer field is only 10 minutes from the airport.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word COMPARE to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Devereaux, Arizona inspires hope in the lives of the most vulnerable members of our community, our children. In Pima County, there are more than 4,000 children in foster care that need your help. Devereaux, Arizona's foster care program gives you the training and support you need to make a difference in the life of a child. Donate, volunteer, or become a foster parent. Find out how at devereauxarizona.org or call 520-296-5551.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com. Tucson-based writer Nancy Turner has been called by book critics as a brilliant voice and an author to look out for. Over the next half hour or so, we are going to visit with Nancy Turner, who is the author of These Is My Words, Sarah's Quilt, The Star Garden, and The Water and Blood. Nancy was born in Dallas and grew up in Southern California and here in Arizona. These Is My Words was selected as one book, one Arizona, and it's being taught in schools all over the country. She resides here in Tucson with her husband and a rescue dog. Nancy's latest effort is a novel titled My Name is Resolute, which Library Journal calls a fascinating work that is better than the last one, and that fans will love this beautifully written and compelling novel. My Name is Resolute tells the story of a remarkable account of a woman who survives servitude, endures loss of home and family, and embodies the courage of settlers who transformed the 18th century North American wilderness into a bold new country. Nancy, how are you? It's good to see you.
I am great. Thank you, Bill. It's wonderful to be here and see you again.
Well, we first met with when I was doing the TV show, we met when your book, These Is My Words, came out. How many years ago was that? That book came out.
I think it's 15 years.
It's been that long. But you hit a home run, certainly, with that book. Were you, in fact, surprised, Nancy, with the success of These Is My Words?
I really was. And I think the publisher has been equally surprised with the longevity of that book. It never really was a bestseller, but what it did was it has sold 300 to 500 copies every month for 14 or 15 years.
So it has great staying power. And why do you think that is, Nancy?
I think partly because it's accessible both to young readers, maybe middle school age, and it holds a lot of memories for older folks. And then for everyone in between, it's just a fun read, a good story.
For my listeners who are not familiar, perhaps this is their first exposure to you, Nancy. How would you describe These Is My Words and the consequent, the sequels to These Is My Words? How would you describe these books?
Well, the main character of those three books is based on family oral history about my great-grandmother, whose name was Sarah Agnes Prine. They had a ranch in southern Arizona, we believe homesteaded, so there was probably more than one place. But one I have found is in close to the town of Pomerene. So it's a very Arizona story, and it's a very, very much a story of survival and courage and really good people set in some tough situations. The 1880s in Arizona is not a place I can imagine just riding up to on a horse and saying, I'll live here.
They sort of wound up here, right? Mm-hmm. And then they had to kind of cobble out a living in a very difficult place. So you would suggest, I assume, that new readers who would like to sample your work would begin with These Is My Words, which is, as you say, so readily available on Amazon, and you sell hundreds of copies. The book is selling hundreds of copies every month. Then progress to the sequels, Sarah's Quilt and The Star Garden. Is that the way it would go?
Well, they all stand alone as a single read book, but I think if you start at the end, then there are some spoilers and you'll miss some of the fun of discovery with the first novel.
How about The Blood and the Water and the Blood, the fourth book?
The Water and the Blood is a story that I wrote after interviewing, by exact count, 101 people. And I wrote it before 9/11 had happened. And I believed at that time that Pearl Harbor bombing was a real pivotal point in American history. So I asked people what they were doing when they first heard about Pearl Harbor. Hmm. How they heard, you know, were they listening to the radio? Did someone come up to them on the street and that kind of thing? And I just got an earful of wonderful stories. So I cobbled together a cast of characters out of those stories and linked it with a crime wave that went across the United States during World War II, which was the burning of churches. So it's a story about a bunch of high school kids who drink some moonshine on Halloween night and burn down a church in East Texas. And then when Pearl Harbor is bombed a few weeks later, their worlds are turned upside down, and being a popular kid in school is no longer a big deal.
So that book would appeal, really, it sounds like people that love history, and especially World War II history, would like that book.
Very much. It's mostly a hometown, home front story, but there are some battle scenes that go on, and there's a little bit of, I think, a very literary look at prejudice and the stratification of our society. The battle scenes that are depicted in it came right from people's own words of memory, so very much researched.
And The Water and the Blood, also available on Amazon?
Yes.
Let's talk now about the new book, My Name is Resolute, and to have a big-time publisher like St. Martin's Press, Thomas Dunn Books, which is an imprint of St. Martin's Press, has enough, they believe that you are a good risk, I guess, because they published basically a 600, close to 600-page book, and not only a good risk, but you've been very successful, and that must be gratifying to have a big-time publisher. So many writers here in Tucson they dream of having that kind of a situation.
Well, so much good writing goes unpublished, sadly. And I think sometimes you just have to trust to fate or the forces that be. But I had a very good agent who believed in my work early on. He recently passed away. So now I'm agentless and back on the hunt, just like a lot of novice writers. But I think the people at St. Martin's, and especially Tom Dunn Books, have really jumped on sort of my bandwagon, and they're willing and anxious to read anything I write.
This book, the genesis for this book, My Name is Resolute, what it was born out of a particular incident, or what was it, Nancy Turner, that got you going on this one?
I had been listening to a radio show where they talked about the importance of the values of our founding fathers, and they were in particular talking about someone's new book that had come out. And I got that book, and then I got more interested and more interested. And as I read the things about the morality, the issues, the courage that it took. I always read between the lines and I think about the women that must have been there. And what would these men have been without their women that surrounded them and allowed them to do what they needed to do? I mean, it's one of my deep-held philosophies that every writer needs a wife, no matter what gender you are. It would sure be nice to have somebody doing the laundry and taking care of the bills and things. But I know that these founding fathers were backed by women who were really strong. And I discovered there was an entire ring of women smugglers who helped in what was called the Committee of Safety, which was a ring of information smuggling and sometimes even material smuggling that went on. The more I researched, the more I realized we just do not learn enough about our country's history in schools. And I wanted to depict someone who could have actually lived at that time and perhaps get involved in a way a very feminine woman would. She would not jump on a horse and pick up a musket and take care of business, but in her own very quiet, secret way, Resolute Talbot sits alone in her home and spins and weaves blue cloth and smuggles it through the Redcoats' lines.
Well, I think it's safe to say that without people like Resolute, the American Revolution would have been a big failure, because these people, these women, were really keeping the armies clothed, fed. And in Resolute's case, Resolute was kind of a master weaver, mm-hmm. Expert at the loom. And so, and then, as you say, this kind of the secret network that was supplying all sorts of vital information to the troops. So,
right.
I mean, it's an intriguing take on the American Revolution. And we're going to learn more about your principal character, Resolute Talbot, as we continue on the Buckmaster Show, our conversation with Tucson-based writer Nancy E. Turner. Her newest book is called My Name is Resolute. We will be right back on the Buckmaster Show.
Hi, I'm Steve Christie. I've served as an RTA board member since 2009 and through last year as its chairman. The RTA continues to be a most successful regional effort, with the RTA and our member jurisdictions completing so far more than 540 construction projects to reduce congestion, increase our safety, and improve crosstown mobility. As part of the original Citizens Advisory Committee, I'm proud of our citizen-driven plan as well as the RTA's accomplishments. We deliver, we promise. Learn more at rtamobility.com.
Vero Amore restaurants are known as the place for authentic wood-fired Neapolitan pizzas, plus delicious pastas, panini, salads, and more. Every flavorful dish is homemade using the finest and freshest local and imported ingredients available. Vero Amore has two locations open daily, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Ready to do some antiquing? If you love a special one-of-a-kind object like I do, I strongly suggest Adobe House Antiques, specializing in early 20th century European and American art, and they have the best selection in town of antique light fixtures. Adobe House Antiques in the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, and on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Tucson Desert Art Museum. Tucson's newest art museum is home to one of the premier collections of pre-1940s Navajo and Hopi textiles, exquisite classic and contemporary paintings and photography, early maps and historic artifacts. Visualize history through art at Tucson Desert Art Museum on East Tanqueverty Road at Sabino Canyon Road, just west of Udall Park, and on the web at TucsonDart.com. That's TucsonDart.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Munger Chadwick are Arizona's business lawyers. Helping Arizona businesses for 40 years, Munger Chadwick is a strategic partner for many businesses operating in Arizona, the Southwest, Mexico, and globally. AV rated and ranked with the best lawyers of America, Munger Chadwick has recognized knowledge in all areas of business law, including corporate real estate mergers, acquisition, employment, along with intellectual property and administrative law, and international trade, immigration, and government affairs. In matters involving disputes, Munger Chadwick takes pride in working with its clients creatively and aggressively, often resolving problems in ways that prevent or avoid litigation. Munger Chadwick, located in Tucson, Phoenix, and Tubac. Business know-how with personal service. Visit MungerChadwick.com or call 721-1900. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. We are speaking with Tucson-based author Nancy Turner. Nancy is the author of the best-selling book, These Is My Words. Then there were the sequels, Sarah's Quilt and The Star Garden. She's also the author of The Water and the Blood. And her newest book is My Name is Resolute, a historic book, a historic fiction. And we're speaking with her about the character, the lead character, Resolute Talbot. So the story, Nancy, begins in 1729, where Resolute and her siblings are living on a plantation on the island of Jamaica.
Right. She is the youngest daughter of a very wealthy plantation manager on, you know, service of the queen at that time. Of course, actually, the Queen Anne had already passed away, but they hadn't heard. And so in writing this book, someone asked me what I would write about if I could write anything I wanted. And I said, you know, I really don't know, but by page 10, there'd be pirates. And so I began the story thinking about what exactly was going on in Jamaica at that time. And I had to do an awful lot of research about the history of Caribbean pirates, and it didn't involve Johnny Depp characters at all.
But there really, it really was a big issue.
It was a tremendous issue. And by the end of 1729, it had actually calmed down a great deal. Mm-hmm. But there was a great trade in slaves, and in general in the American colonies. Before 1750, more slaves in this on this continent were white than African.
Really?
The big increase came about the end of the French and Indian War in 1754. So before that, a great many of the slaves were white, and a lot of them were captured or orphaned children.
So they took Resolute Talbot and the kids up to Montreal initially and put them in a convent? Is that basically it?
Well, they were first sold into indenture in Maine to a Puritan family. And then one of the tribes of the upper New England area called Abenaki Indians had a great trade of captured children with the Ursuline Convent in Montreal. So they were taken there and sold yet again. And in you know, in the reality of it, when Resolute and her sister escape, it really has taken on a new turn in a story. It does have a romantic element, and Resolute marries and falls in love and mm-hmm. this and that. Mm-hmm. But it is ultimately a story about these three siblings and their lives and the tumultuous era of America coming into being as a country, but how they are separated and then return to each other, and great story of forgiveness and love and acceptance of each other.
And the story moves to the Boston area, to Lexington, at a very important time, pre-revolution and into the Revolutionary War.
Right. When Resolute and her sister Patience escape from the convent, Resolute is left alone on a street headed toward Lexington with no idea what she's going to do. But while she was in the convent, she had been taught to weave really fine linen and begins to do that and make her way there because it wasn't good in those days to be a single woman alone. You were either an outcast, diseased, mentally ill, probably a witch. Some reason you had been driven alone away from your family in another town. So she has to work really hard to overcome that stigma that just comes along with being unaccompanied.
Boston is very important in the book, and you spent a couple of very long research trips in the Boston area. In fact, you dedicate My Name is Resolute to what you call the Second Boston Massacre, a year ago, April, the tragedy and loss of life in Boston.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't really for the same reason, but still that bombing was a strike against American values and culture. And I think the first Boston Massacre, of course, is questionable whether it was anything but just a sort of mad rout. But it was indeed something that added fuel to the fire of the Revolution.
When did you know that you wanted to do writing for a living, Nancy Turner?
Well, my goodness. I started college as an alternative student, meaning my children went to college with me.
So you started rather late in life.
Yes.
Then to start college.
Yes. Yes. And my goal was to become a high school English teacher. Mm-hmm. But by the time I finished with my core classes at Pima, I had gotten These Is My Words published. And by the time I graduated from the university, The Water and the Blood was published. And I thought, you know, a lot of teachers wait their whole career and then want to retire and write. And here I have two novels published by HarperCollins. I think I'll just skip to the chase and and write novels and leave those teenagers to better hands than mine.
I know you want to thank some local people who have helped you along the way.
I do. I had wonderful teachers and mentors at both Pima and the university, but Meg Files is just a fabulous teacher and is still teaching at Pima. Highly recommend her classes. Otis Bronson recently passed away, and he was a wonderful teacher at Pima and literally put his hand on my shoulder, gave me permission to write a novel, and that means a lot to a new writer.
Bonnie Marston,
Bonnie Marston is fabulous, and Jennifer Lee Carroll. We three meet regularly and share story ideas and pages and plot information, and you know, just have wonderful discussions about point of view and things that writers love to talk about.
When you start a book, do you know how it's going to end, or is it a work in progress?
I usually begin with a character, mm-hmm. and I sort of get to know them by writing short stories or some kind of character sketch. And I know where I want them to be when I'm done, because in any novel, the whole point of reading it is to watch someone develop and change. So I usually know where I'm starting and I know where I'm ending, but I have no idea how I'll get there. And that all comes and unfolds as I do research. And, of course, a lot of research is being at the places. So I travel. I just kind of get the feel of the area, and I read and read and read and read.
We're speaking with Nancy E. Turner. She is the author of My Name is Resolute, her book, best-selling book, These Is My Words, still selling very well, almost 15 years or whatever it is, at least that long since that book was published. What's next for you, Nancy?
Well, I have just recently started a new book, writing a new book. I'm a little scared to talk about anything quite so nebulous at this point, but mm-hmm. the working title is Speak to Me of Mountains.
Hmm.
And it opens after the fall of Vicksburg in the Civil War.
Mm-hmm. Well, Vicksburg being, of course, one of the bloodiest, the siege of Vicksburg. I've been there and stood on those cliffs over the Mississippi. It's very, very moving. But that siege went on a long time at Vicksburg.
It did.
Yeah. Nancy Turner, where can we find out more information about you? Would you suggest people go to Amazon? Would that be one starting place?
Well, Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and I have a webpage mm-hmm. that's easy to remember because it is ends with my initials. So it's NancyEturner.net.
May I ask what the E stands for?
Elaine.
Okay.
I think Elaine would be a great pen name, but I just always use Nancy, so okay. There we are.
Nancy, thank you very much. Been a pleasure.
You're welcome, Bill. Thank you.
Bottled water on the Buckmaster Show is supplied by Culligan Water. Thank you, Culligan, all of our in-studio guests. Enjoy a nice chilled bottle of Culligan Water. Better water, pure and simple. That is the logo, and that's what it's all about. Thanks, Culligan. Coming up this afternoon, another local talk show we'd like you to listen to, Mike Shaw for Tucson at 4 on AM 1030 KVOI, then Wake Up Tucson tomorrow morning with Chris and Joe, 6 to 8. The Daily Double is from 8 to 9. We're back at 12:04 with Mayor Rothschild as our Friday Focus interview. On behalf of producer Rosemary Brad, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Have a good afternoon.
Intelligent Talk 24/7, AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. On the web at KVOI.com.